Howdy do, buggeroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Wednesday. I am coming to you from Mordor, or at least it mostly looks like Mordor because a lot of Oregon is burning down. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Glad you're with me.
That's how it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's morning, you know, again, so I guess that's a good sign, right? I should take that. Another reason it's a good morning is because also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, hey, good to be here. I think I like to think that I make every morning good.
You do. I like to think that too, so we're in agreement on that. John, I'd actually like to start with you and an interesting article that you came across last week in Particle Debris.
Yeah, I talked about called the Mac article that showcased a setup. In this case, the setup was from an Australian government official in Australia.
Okay.
I think. And he showed a picture of his desktop with a Mac Mini. And Mac Mini has 32 gig of RAM and a terabyte SSD. Ooh. And a glorious, glorious, beautiful big 43-inch Samsung curved 4K TV attached. And it got me thinking about all the discussions we've had about the Mac Mini. You
know, John's heart went pitter-pat over that 43-inch curved display.
Because I have a 34-inch curved display.
I know.
And so I got kind of turned on, and it made me realize that your window into a Mac psychologically can be influenced a little bit by the size of the display, independent of your hard-nosed practical realization of the limits of the hardware of your Mac.
So you can get a mental upgrade to your machine by slapping a bigger screen on it, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Kay. That's a nice way to put it. And so take a look at the Cult of Mac article referenced in Particle Debris from Saturday this week. And take a look at Catalina running on this fella's Mac Mini.
Oh, it's pretty.
And it's got a Apple Magic Keyboard, a Logitech wireless gaming headset, a live stream cam that's sitting on top of the Samsung display, and a nice monitor stand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's probably the widest screen I've ever seen.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
As we always recommend, you should sit down and take a close look at the specs of your Mac on the Apple product page and see what it can do on an external monitor, because sometimes there are curious limitations or curious nice enhancements on what our various Macs can do. And sometimes Macs that are not so recent are pretty limited, and sometimes a Mac that is recent is more limited than you may think in terms of what it can do on an external display. Mm-hmm. So it's helpful to check that out before you go shopping for a nice big display or a second display for your Mac.
Yeah, it definitely. And we talk about displays here on the regular. We talk about monitors. We talked to John about HDR and 4K and 5K and 8K and why does that matter, and you know, why should you care about it in practical everyday terms. So if you have questions about that, I would like to have you please let us know, because I personally feel like it's a thing we can't talk about enough because it gets really confusing really quickly. So please let us know at observations@macobserver.com, TMO Daily at Twitter, or with comments in the show notes. Definitely, if you have questions about that, we totally want to hear from you. Now, John, I read this article, and I have a question for you about it. In looking at the setup, because he's got loads of RAM, he's got loads of storage, he's got loads of ports, he's got the acreage that is that Samsung display. Like, I know that your computer is aging. I don't think it's unfair to say that your computer's been around a while.
I have a Mac Pro from 2013.
Yeah,
the black... Still coming along really nice.
The black circle.
The trash can.
I was trying to be nice. It looks like... You know, it's people called
glorious,
it the trash can
it's
Mac.
Glorious Mac as a writer. There's lots of ports.
Yes.
And it served me well.
It is an older machine, though. And so I presume at some point you're going to look at upgrading. And I wondered if seeing this particular setup might have caught your upgrade fancy a little bit.
No.
How come?
No. So first of all, the Mac Mini is a great machine for casual users working at home or in the office place with lightly loaded, not a lot of pro necessities. I think if you're going to do podcasting and video, you need a pro machine. So I've expressed my concern about the power and the ventilation of the Mac Mini. I've had some interesting feedback on Twitter and email about this article. And a lot of people wrote me and said, I love my Mac Mini. They sort of struck me as people who weren't taxing it real strongly, although that was just my intuition from the article. And then I got a tweet from a fellow who said, you know, it really is a too small a case. It doesn't have enough ventilation. You need to be able to do more with it, be able to pack more power into it without getting overheated. Charlotte has an i5 Mac Mini, or Charlotte Henry at the Mac Observer. And she reports that at times it can get very hot, too hot to touch. Mm-hmm. And so to answer your question, I am hard pressed to figure out what Mac I would buy if my Mac Pro died.
Well, this is my question.
It wouldn't be a Mac Mini.
Okay, but how come? Because I feel like you can get one with as much horsepower as anything else Apple has available right now. You can get one with
CPU power alone is not the deal.
No, but that's one aspect. You can get as much horsepower out of this machine as anything else in Apple's lineup. You can customize the memory. You can have 16 gig, 32 gig of RAM. I don't even remember how high the Mini goes. You can have a giant hard drive. You can get one of those little, you know, zero footprint hard drives to go underneath it and put a bunch more storage on it if storage is your issue. The external GPU situation makes it a great machine for that sort of thing. Again, all those ports make it very extensible. And you can build it kind of into the Mac Pro that Apple doesn't make anymore. So this is the reason I was curious if this had caught your upgrade fancy, because I feel like as a machine, it would be a very capable machine to do all of the things that you do, unless I find out that you're like editing feature films in your spare time or something on that massive screen of yours.
I have to do a port count. I haven't officially done that yet, but you know, sort of do a one-to-one parallel comparison of the ports on the Mac Mini to the ports on my Mac Pro. Uh-huh. Because I do podcasting, there are certain things I have to do direct connect. I can't go through a hub.
Absolutely.
Or a dock. So I have a dock connected to my Mac Pro, but it's mostly for keyboard and USB stuff and a little drive. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of stuff direct connected to my
Mac
Pro,
and which is part of why this was my question.
Whether I could continue to do that with the Mac Mini, I suspect I could not.
See, and I suspect you could.
I'd have to get a piece of paper out and do a drawing and
yes,
sketch the ports.
I would be very curious to see how the port count on a current iteration Mini stacks up against the Pro that you have. I would be very, very interested in that. So I'll just say I look forward to your article on that, because I think it'll be interesting.
Because I should do that.
I really, not because I'm trying to sell you a Mini, but because I really think it's an option you should consider. Because now that it's been updated.
I had a cheese grater Mac Pro before 2009 with an Nehalem. And it was massive, and it had drive bays, and it had massive power supply and seven fans, and it's really workhorse.
Yeah.
And it still works when we power it up.
Yeah, it had expansion slots that you couldn't even see due to the curvature of the earth. There were so many. They just kept going forever. Yeah. It was a great machine. But it was also, like the current Mac Pro, you could buy a computer, a reasonably spec'd out computer, or you could buy a car. And, you know, while those 53 pounds of aluminum are beautiful and super extensible for people who need extensibility, like, I don't know how much of that extensibility was ever actually being utilized by the bulk of people who bought it, as opposed to the bulk of people who bought it and went, I have this really cool Apple computer. Check it out, you know, because if I'd had it, that's exactly what I would have done.
From time to time, it occurs to me that maybe I would max out my credit card and buy a 2019 Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem there is it has to sit on the floor, and running the cables from my desk into a machine that sits on the floor is a pain.
Yep.
As well, I like having a little black cylinder behind my display where I have easy access mm-hmm. to the power on button and the ports.
And
so
I have a mini in my house, and I have it in one of those wire baskets that has the arms so that you slide it, you know, onto the shelf or onto the counter, you know, so that you've got like this little bonus bit of storage space. I bought one of those and stuck it on the side of my table here. And I have a mini that lives in there, and it's pretty great. It's just quiet, hangs out over there, out of the way. I love it.
This is why I pine for a Mac Mini Pro. About twice the size and about 50% more ports and a really robust system bus. No compromises.
Like so many ports, though. Anyway, okay. Yeah.
Anyway.
So, John and I will talk about his mythical Mini Pro on a future episode, I promise. And if you are a person who is waiting to hear about it, then again, let us know, observations@MacObserver.com. We do read your letters and we do enjoy them, and we do occasionally, when we get enough of them, we will structure shows around the feedback that we get from people. So we definitely want to talk about it. Right now, what I'd like to do is take a minute and talk to you about our sponsor this week. And our sponsor this week is Mint Mobile. So if you are still using one of those big wireless providers this year, have you asked yourself what you're actually paying for? Because part of what you're paying for is expensive retail stores, which are doing really well right now. You're also probably paying inflated prices, and you're paying hidden fees. And the reason you're paying those is because you're sort of getting suckered for it, because the big companies know that you'll pay. Mint Mobile is trying to providing you the exact same premium network coverage, but at a fraction of the cost because everything's online. So Mint Mobile will cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month. Every plan is unlimited nationwide talk and text. And one of the ways that you can save money is by only paying for data you actually use. You can take your own phone to any Mint Mobile plan. You can keep your same number, all your contacts. I'm using it. Switching was a snap. Activation was really easy online, and having everything just show up at my house and saving me a trip to one of those expensive stores was super great. My chances to test the actual reception have been limited, but everywhere I've gone, it's been as good or better than the service that I had already. So definitely something to consider. You can ditch your old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile. And to do that, just for my listeners, you can get the new wireless plan. Like I said, it can be as little as $15 a month, and get everything you need shipped to your door for free by going to mintmobile.com/TDO. That's mintmobile.com/TDO. Cut your wireless bill down to even maybe just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TDO. And we'd like to thank Mint Mobile for sponsoring the show today. Now, the other thing we have to discuss is the latest in a saga. And I guess it's fair to call it an epic saga, because it's Epic who kind of started all of this in the first place. But once again, we have, you know, as the lawsuit turns, I guess we have to call it.
Yeah, that's great. So if you've been following along at the Mac Observer, you would know what's been happening. But just as a quick summary, Epic Games has this very popular game called Fortnite. And at one point, they added an update that added its own payment system in addition to Apple's in-app purchase system, which is against Apple's rules. So Apple... they said, remove this or we'll remove Fortnite. Epic fired back with its lawsuit against both Apple and Google. And so Apple then removed Epic Games' access to its developer tools, but only in relation to Fortnite, because a judge had granted part of Epic Games' temporary restraining order to try to stop this. Mm-hmm. So the judge said Epic or Apple can't restrict the use of Unreal Engine, which is something okay. else that Epic Games owns. So this whole thing is just about Fortnite, because Unreal Engine is something that third-party developers used, and they would be harmed by Apple cutting it off completely, and so it's just about Fortnite. Now, Charlotte wrote up yesterday, Epic has filed a motion to try to get the court to force Fortnite back on the App Store. Their motion describes Apple as a monopolist that retaliated with ferocity to its attempts to avoid these App Store fees. So the main thing that Apple or Epic Games wants is they don't want to pay Apple 30% of their revenue anymore. Mm-hmm. And they also want to have their own App Store on Apple's platforms.
Okay.
Let's see. Now, in Charlotte's article, she said there was this firm, this financial education hub called BuyShares. They estimated that Epic Games could take a $26.7 million a month hit because Fortnite is no longer available on the App Store.
Yeah.
Now, you got that? You got all that?
A billion-dollar company is suing a trillion-dollar company because the billion-dollar company isn't making as much money as they want to off the trillion-dollar company.
Yes.
Okay.
Now,
so yes, I'm up to speed. Thank you for the update, Andrew.
Yeah, that's another good summary. So I think that whether or not you agree with Apple's rules, I would say Epic Games has mostly been the aggressor here. They're the ones that purposely added the payment system, breaking Apple's rules. They're the ones that sued them until yesterday. So the latest thing that I wrote up from CNBC is Apple has countersued Epic Games over a breach of contract.
Oh, ho.
It says in their filing, Apple says Epic's lawsuit is nothing more than a basic disagreement over money. Although Epic portrays itself as a modern corporate Robin Hood, in reality, it is a multi-billion dollar enterprise that simply wants to pay nothing for the tremendous value it derives from the App Store. So wow. That is the latest happening.
Right. Apple could have picked a better phrase than Robin Hood, because Robin Hood has such warm fuzzies in our culture.
Yeah,
that's true.
Claiming your opponent is a Robin Hood, it didn't seem like a swift move to me.
Yeah, because Robin Hood steals from the rich and gives to the poor.
Yeah, and that. So, that's definitely not the greatest example. But I think the Unreal Engine piece of this is interesting. And partly because there are so many games that use it. Like, if you go look, like, I went and looked at one point, you know, what would this really look like? And, like, I think it's one of the Final Fantasy remakes, is it 7? That they, like, remastered or whatever, that uses Unreal Engine. At least one of the Gears of War games, like, recent ones, I think, is using Unreal Engine. And there's a couple of others. And those are the only... You know, like, I don't play them. Those are just ones that I know about that I recognize the name. So I figure they must be really popular because I don't play games and I know what they are. So,
So with this lawsuit, Apple is asking the court to hold Epic liable for a breach of contract, and they also want damages. So they want all that money that Fortnite collected when it used its own payment system. Because the thing is, because of Apple's 30% cut, companies usually, they're kind of forced to have their services priced a bit higher than maybe they usually would on other platforms. Mm-hmm. And so Epic... Like, they worded it so that if you use our payment system, you can save, I don't know how many percent. But if you use Apple's stinky old Apple's payment system, you have to pay more. So I don't know how much money they made through their payment system, but Apple wants that. And they also want a permanent injunction to ban Epic from having that payment system in Fortnite again.
Yeah. So, and you know, the thing about that, I still feel pretty strongly about is, you know, Apple saying, or you know, Epic saying, like, we really want, and I think this is where it gets a little disingenuous, because basically they've been saying from the beginning, like, all we really want is to implement our own app store in our own app. Like, why is that such a terrible thing? That kind of continues to be how they're playing it. And and like, all I can think of is, if you let anybody have an app store, their own app store, you have to let anybody have their own app store. And that seems sketchy at best. Like, this is kind of where I'm at. I don't find a clear advantage there. And, you know,
I'm trying to think of an analogy, Kelly, and the one I came up with, and I don't know if it's any good or not, but the one I was thinking about is, you go into the grocery store and you're in the soup aisle, and you pull a can of soup off the shelf, and you scan the barcode and you pay the Campbell soup directly. And you're done, and you walk out of the store, and they say, "Hey, wait a minute, you didn't pay for that soup." And you said, "Oh, yes, I paid for it. I paid less than you charged."
Yeah.
And the store has a right to be upset about that, because you're using the storefront to display and showcase and stock and warehouse and deliver the product, and they're charging for that service. And then you bypass them. So that's one analogy. I don't know if it fits or not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the reason I think Epic Games is being disingenuous is because they already did the same thing with Android. So on Android, it is more open. You can sideload apps. And that's what Epic did. They removed Fortnite, and they tried to get their fans to download their app store. But they weren't happy with the number of downloads they got with that, as opposed to having it in the Play Store. So they eventually relented and they put it back in the Play Store, but they still included Google in their lawsuit.
Yeah.
So we don't really know what exactly Epic Games kind of wants, because what they want from Apple is what they already want from Google, but it didn't really work out the way they wanted.
Yeah. I'm definitely, as before, I'm definitely curious to see how this turns out. So... yeah, so we'll find out, and as we find out more, obviously we will update you here. So that's going to do it for us today. I want to thank you both for coming by. Andrew, as always, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
John Martellaro, thank you for dropping by.
Thanks for having me too. Nice talk.
Yeah, and as I said, observations at MacObserver.com is the easiest way to get a hold of us. Talk to us about the new Mac Mini, or if you are a slighted Fortnite player and you want this fixed, or if you really just don't think anybody's looking good in this lawsuit right now, let us know that too. I'm your host, Kelly Gamana. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other, and let's be careful out there.